This is Hometown Heroes. Honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the show where each time we take a trip back in time and listen to stories from our greatest generation. We want to honor our veterans for their service and sacrifice. We want to preserve their stories, especially for the benefit of their families, but also for the broader purpose of holding on to history and not letting the price that's been paid for our freedom go unnoticed. As we listen to these stories, we're certainly educated, we're entertained, and if you get out of it as much as I do, you might find yourself inspired sometimes by the way these people lived, the way they see the world still today. Each veteran's story truly is unique, so it sounds a bit strange to call one story more rare than another, but the bottom line is there were a lot fewer women wearing military uniforms during World War II than there were men. Of the more than 16 million Americans in our armed forces during that time period, a little more than 350,000 were women. So that's a little more than 2%. The WASPs were a pretty exclusive group. Women Air Force service pilots made up only about 1,000. There's a new documentary out about what they did in the war. You should check that out. You've heard about the Navy Waves, the Coast Guard Spars. The Army had the WACs, not to mention all the nurses in the Army and the Navy. And the young lady we're going to hear from today was involved in yet another branch of service. You can think about that. See if you figure it out before she tells us. June Moran is 90 years old. She definitely doesn't look it. You can check out her photo on the Hometown Heroes Facebook page if you don't believe me. And my interview with June was recorded under different circumstances from what we typically experience here on Hometown Heroes. I was invited by a group of women known as the Kingsburg Tuesday Club to come and interview June at their monthly meeting. So as five or six dozen women enjoyed some delicious cake with fresh-made whipped cream on top, man, I could have eaten a whole table full of that. It was good. They also served, I guess you could say, as our studio audience. So if you hear applause or laughter or other reactions, now you know the context of that. Here we go. 90-year-old June Moran of Kingsburg, California. Well, first of all, June, why don't you tell us all where you grew up? Where are you from?
Pennsylvania. Started life in Pennsylvania. And lived there till I was about 10. We moved to Washington, D.C. during the Depression for about 4 years. And then we moved to San Diego.
And you were moving all these places because your father was in the military, right?
Well, he was retired, but we moved to D.C. because of the Depression. He lost his job in Pennsylvania. They lost everything, actually. And because he was a veteran, he had few extra points on the civil service exam, and so that's why he went to D.C., found a job there.
Did you have a big family, a small family?
There were five of us. I had three younger brothers, for which my mother was very thankful when the war came along, because they didn't have to go. I had an older sister, 2 years older than I am, yes.
For those of us who didn't live through the Depression, how difficult was that for you?
Wasn't good. I mean, it was really sad to see your parents change, which I think mine did, especially my mother, because my father had been ill with pneumonia, and in those days they didn't have penicillin to help you get over that, so he was a long time getting over it, but he did survive, but he lost his job, then they lost their house, lost the car, so it meant sacrifice that and move on. And finally, he decided he would go down to D.C., apply for a job there as an ex-service person. And so he worked in the patent office, and finally we moved there. But it was not good at first. Got better afterwards, but there it was just, you know, they just lost everything. So, you know, you didn't have anything. Mm-hmm. But we managed.
Yeah, you found a way. I've heard that story from so many, and it's an important piece, I think, to the story of our greatest generation. It wasn't just that they were alive at that time. It was what they had lived through before it that gave them the perspective that they needed. So tell me about December 7th, 1941. I ask everybody on this program about that day, and everyone has an interesting memory. The guy I had last week was actually flying into Pearl Harbor. that morning. It was a very interesting story. I don't think you were in Hawaii that morning. Were you in Washington, D.C.? Is that where you were?
No, I was in San Diego. Actually, I was in church.
And you had probably just graduated from high school?
Oh, well, I graduated in 42. Yeah.
So you were a senior in high school.
We were the first war class after December 7th, because we had midterm down there. No, my dad let me take the car to church, and my brother and I were, that's where we were. When we came home, here was the news on the radio, and my dad was glued to that radio like you can't believe, listening to everything. Just devastating, and it was unbelievable that this would happen to us, that someone would, you know, and it was such a disaster, my goodness. And of course, no TV then. I mean, you didn't see any pictures until in the newspaper a couple of days later, but on the radio, it was constant all day long.
And with your father having been a Navy veteran, and now most of our Navy has been destroyed, that must have been really hard for him.
Very hard. He kept saying something's going to happen. He would get news from the Naval News, you know, retired person. And boy, as soon as that happened, he said, well, I'm going back in the service. And my mother says, you're too old. They won't take you. He says, oh, yes, they will. They want every man they can get. And he went. In 6 months from that, he was in, like, back in again.
Wow.
And so they gave him the rifle range at Camp Matthews there in San Diego. And that's what he had during the war.
Wow. I imagine that made an impression on you as a young lady, that this was important enough to your father that even at his age he would find something to do?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, he's military through and through, Navy for sure. And it's a Navy town. San Diego was just inundated with Army, Navy, Marines, and so forth. So it was around you all the time, plus the air. Craft industry brought a lot of people from the Midwest out there to work, and that's when the women started working, Rosie the Riveter, etc.
And what was school like the next day? Because you had to go to high school the next morning.
Right. Well, things were, there was no prom dance except in the gym, and everything had to be blackout. You know, everything went to war, you might say. So there was no frills or anything really special. It was kind of bare.
You talk about the blackout, San Diego being in the location it was. There was a lot of fear that the Japanese would show up right there at San Diego. Was that something you were afraid of or concerned about?
I don't think so, but we did. They did have drills every so often, and then the sirens go off, and you had to make sure your windows were covered, and you dove under the table just in case there'd be something. But we did have Japanese living around. And all of a sudden, they're gone. They knew that was going to happen. They mean they disappeared just before the 7th. And some of them had stores, as you know, like a grocery store. And all of a sudden, it was closed. It was gone. We wondered what happened. Well, they had the word, and they were gone.
When was it that you decided that this was something you'd like to get involved with? Was that because of your father's example, or what motivated you to... Does anyone know what branch of service June was in? Your daughter does. Some people might be a little shocked when you say this. Tell us which branch of the service that you signed up for.
Marine Corps. Mm-hmm. Yep. Mm-hmm.
Did you hear that reaction?
Yeah, I did.
Some people don't know that there's such a thing as a female Marine, or certainly that there was in World War II. How did you find out about that?
Well, I worked down at Broadway Pier. And I saw so many troop ships being loaded with Army and Marines, and it was just tremendous amount of men that they could get aboard one of these ships. And then they had a USO in downtown San Diego. You used to stop there and see the fellows and, you know, dance with them. And so you got to know them pretty, but they were pretty nice guys that were in the Marine Corps, and that kind of influenced me, I think. And I think my dad was a little disappointed that I didn't go in the Navy. And so he asked why, and I said, well, I didn't like the uniform. It was too sloppy.
You didn't want to be wearing those bell-bottom trousers, is that it?
All right. No, he couldn't argue with that. He said, okay, but I think he was a little crushed. But
so if I read between the lines, it sounds like the guys that came down from Camp Pendleton just looked really good, and you were hoping to meet one of them?
Oh, I met quite a few.
Any one in particular?
Oh, there's one guy who's really pretty sweet on, I guess you'd say. But he gave me a lot of pointers about what to expect in the Marine Corps, which was good, because you're never totally prepared for that, I can tell you. That's something else.
How did your mother feel about you joining the Marines?
Not happy, not happy. But she was very happy that her sons were not the same age as her daughter, so they would have been gone. And they all did serve later in the services, but they were too young to go to war. So she was very happy about that.
Well, I'm sure they had to sign up after their big sister was a Marine. They had to try to live up to that example. So what was it like getting welcomed to the Marine Corps? Was boot camp difficult?
Boot camp was something else. Yeah, it was. It was very difficult. You didn't even know your own name the first week. And you never put any makeup on until the last, we had 6 weeks of boot camp. About the last week, you finally found time to put a little makeup on. Until then, forget it. You were so busy doing your chore. First thing they yell, hit the deck at 6 o'clock, 0600. And you do calisthenics for 10 minutes. Then you get to go to the head. Thank God. Yeah, there's somebody yelling at you all the time, you know, do this, do that, blah, 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 blah. And as long as you do what they say or jump as high as they want you to jump, you're okay.
And are these women who are training you or men?
We had men DIs, the drill instructors. But other than that, it was women. And we had one gal scared the heck out of us. I think she looked like she was 7 feet tall. She was from Texas, and she had, believe it or not, she had a swagger stick. I mean, she was in control. And you were just a lowlife down here. And she let you know it every day, tells you. And don't think the Marine Corps will do the thinking for you. Okay. So as long as you, you know, went along with it, didn't let it get to you, you're okay. But it was tough. I mean, there's no doubt about it.
She didn't have to use that swagger stick on you, did she?
No, thank you very much. No. I don't think she ever used it. She just felt she had to have that as being important.
What was the toughest part of that for you to get used to? And did you ever wonder, maybe I made the wrong decision here?
I think everybody, the first week you're there, we're all looking at each other, what have I done? I don't know, the hardest part is marching with 29 other women with you. You didn't go anywhere by yourself. You went, you marched to chow, you marched to your class, you marched to chapel. It didn't matter, you took everybody with you. And until you finished boot camp, you were not on your own. After that, then you feel kind of lost. You know, with all these people, where are they go? It was rigorous, but it was good training. I must say it was very good training. They teach you to be observant, which I have found out to be a real asset. There's just a lot of things. It's a totally different life. That's all I can say, just totally different life. And when you come aboard, they say, oh, you see this nice clean campus? Well, guess who gets to keep it clean? You do. Everybody had a turn in the barrel with the stick that had a little nail on the end, and you ground pick up trash and put it in the bag. Everybody had to turn. Everybody had a turn at guard duty, and you all had either kitchen police, KP. You know, you were trained to do something right in boot camp.
So did you have an idea of what kind of duties you were hoping to receive as a woman Marine?
Well, I knew I wasn't going to be going overseas, that's for sure. So what their motto for the women, WRs, were this, to free a man to fight. And so we replaced a lot of the fellows in different occupations. I ended up in the personnel office, which was in the general's building, which was quite a ways away. We hoofed it every day. There we had a motor pool. Some gals were really mechanics. Anything that they could release the man to go and do, well, that's, they replaced them. And that was the idea.
And how did you feel about that at the time? Because today we have some people that say, oh, that's a great way to do it. And there's other people that say, well, a woman should be able to go out there and do a man's job. Did you feel that what you were doing was exactly what you should be doing?
I did. Yes, I did. And women's lib was not even thought of then, you understand.
How'd you like your uniform?
I like the uniform. That's why I went.
And you have pictures, right?
Oh, yes, I do. Yes, I do.
We'll need to see those. Probably don't have them here today.
I thought about it the last minute, and then I thought, oh, maybe I shouldn't bring them. But I almost did. But.
Well, I think all these ladies know where to find you, so you'll have some show and tell later. And I'd love to see it, too.
And since we recorded this interview in front of that live studio audience, if you will, the lovely ladies of the Kingsburg Tuesday Club, I have seen the photos, and you can see for yourself on the Hometown Heroes Facebook page, 90-year-old June Moran of Kingsburg, California, our guest today, and we'll get more of her experiences as a woman Marine, or as they called them then, the WRs, members of the Marine Corps Women's Reserve in World War II. Hometown Heroes will continue right after this.
They say a picture is worth a thousand words, but when it comes to making my mouth water, I don't need a thousand words, just two of them. Mongolian beef. Okay, two more. Ming's restaurant. And I guess if you want to know where to find it, I should give you two more. Las Banas. That's where I grew up, and I'm guessing Las Banas is somewhere you pass through every now and then. And if you drop in for the Mongolian beef, you might start calling it what I have for years. My favorite place to eat. Period. He may not look old enough for this to be true, but the owner, Paul Cito, has been working his magic in the kitchen there for 45 years now. It's all delicious. If you're a garlic fan, try the Baja shrimp and thank me later. But the Mongolian beef is absolutely unmatched. The flavor, incredible. The texture, tremendous. I can't do it justice with words. You just gotta go taste it. One word of caution, do not go on Monday because Ming's is closed on Mondays. So pick another day, tell them I sent you, and let me know if your taste buds enjoy it as much as mine do. That's Ming's Restaurant, 435 West Pacheco Boulevard in lovely Las Banas, California.
If you are a World War II veteran and you have not been to the World War II Memorial in Washington, D.C., Honor Flight wants to take you there, free of charge. The sooner you submit an application, the sooner Honor Flight can get you to your memorial. In Kern County or the Central Coast, call Lily Marsh at 661-544-VETS. That's 661-544-VETS. Or go to honorflightkernCounty.org. For Fresno, Madera, Merced, Mariposa, Kings, or Tulare counties, check out CV Honor Flight, CV as in Central Valley, CVHonorFlight.org, or call Al Perry at 559-970-9853. That's 559-970-9853. Maybe you're the son or daughter of a veteran and you'd like to go along as a guardian. There are applications for that too, and there are other ways you can help. Donations to Honor Flight are tax deductible. We all owe our freedom and liberty to the men and women who put their lives on the line for it. Let's all come together now behind Honor Flight and give our veterans one more tour with honor.